Thank you for that introduction. So Helicoverpa midra nucleopolyhedrovirus, abbreviated here in PV, is a currently commercially available product. It's host specific to heliothines, and the heliothine we were interested in was the corn earworm Helicoverpa zea. The corn earworm is the primary insect pest of soybeans in Arkansas and arguably the Mid-South. It causes both defoliation and fruit damage, which results in indirect as well as direct yield losses. Also, it is prone to developing resistance, already resistant to several older insecticide classes, and one of those newer classes that it is resistant to is the pyrethroids. This means that we're always looking for new control tactics, such as here in PV. So the way here in PV works is it has a protein structure surrounding the viral DNA, which is the infectious material. Once ingested by the host, the protein structure breaks down in the midgut, where that DNA then infects the midgut cells, eventually spreading throughout the host, liquefying the host, and killing the host ultimately. It is important to note that here in PV can be applied like other synthetic insecticides. So late-stage larvae, these are all virus-dead larvae that you would see in the canopy after an application. Basically, as you can see, they're just sacks of millions of viral particles waiting to be released in the environment. This release in the environment and subsequent infection of another healthy larvae is called horizontal transmission, which is also a vital aspect of understanding the efficacy of this product. Horizontal transmission occurs through several different methods. Abiotic conditions such as wind and rain can transport the viral particles from the soil, which acts as a refuge to the crop canopy where infection can occur. An infected larvae can transmit the virus straight to a healthy larvae by being cannibalized by a healthy larvae, the frass consumption of that infected larvae, and then the surface contamination due to the movement of the infected larvae, and ultimately the liquefaction of that infected larvae. Also, parasitoids that emerge from and oviposit into infected larvae can transmit here in PV, and predators that feed upon infected larvae can defecate frass with high enough viral concentrations when consumed by healthy larvae to cause infection. So the objective of my study was trying to determine the efficacy of here in PV with many different factors to consider. So time to mortality from the application, percent mortality by instar, horizontal transmission potential, and ultimately and the residual time of this product. The first two of these were done through a greenhouse study. We took soybeans, we grew them in a greenhouse until V3. The sprayed soybeans were then taken outside to be sprayed with the virus. They were then brought back in, and all soybeans were caged with a single larvae being placed on each soybean plant. They each had their individual cages. So this was a two-factor study with larval instar, first through fifth, and sprayed or unsprayed. It was replicated 270 times, with the sprayed having twice as many replications as the unsprayed. So the sprayed had 120, while the unsprayed only had 90. Every 12 hours, we took mortality and percent defoliation ratings. And then at 14 days after the original application, we reinfested with a second instar, and this was to simulate a second generation, a second flight. And then all data was analyzed using an ANOVA and a Tukey's post hoc analysis using SAS. So this graph represents the defoliation by instar. The blue bars are the unsprayed, the orange bars are the sprayed. You have percent defoliation on the y-axis and larval instar on the x-axis. The asterisks there signify a significant difference between the treatment per instar. So the only two that we did not see a significant decrease in defoliation with the virus was the second and fifth instars. The fifth instars was most likely due to pupation. They pupated fairly quickly in our study, but the second instars is most likely due to contamination. We had high viral death in our second instars and our untreated plots. Time to death, they ranged anywhere from 4 to 6 days. It didn't seem to depend on instar. However, the fifth instar bar there has a sample size of one. We only had one fifth instar die of the virus, and the fourth instar did take, although not significantly different, it did seem to take a little bit longer than the others. However, when you looked at percent mortality, this really tells you the story. Those first Instars had a percent mortality of 97. The second and thirds were both at 100, but the fourth Instar was only at 35%, and the fifth Instar was that one larval Instar at and that was a 3%. So this really told us that we don't want to target those later Instars. When we reinfested, we saw that it took about 3.5 days to kill that second generation, and it did not depend on what the previous Instar was. So there didn't seem to be a response to what the larvae was originally once we reinfested with that second generation. So what we glean from this is that our target population with this virus is that first through third Instar, and it takes anywhere from 4 to 6 days to actually see kill. It did seem to reduce percent defoliation across all the Instars except that fifth Instar, even though the second Instar was not significant in our study. And it does seem to be able to kill a second infestation, possibly faster, but once again, this was just a greenhouse study, so keep that in mind. The second part of this objective was to look at the horizontal transmission potential and the residual time. We did this by taking a 50 by 50 foot application area. We set up sample distances of 0 to 25, 25 to 50, 50 to 100, and 100 to 200 feet away from the application area. We then sampled those distances 3, 7, 10, 14, and 21 days after the application. We exchanged sweep nets at each distance, and we started from that 200-foot distance and worked our way into the application area. Both of these were done in order to reduce the potential for that anthropogenic movement of the virus. Once samples were taken, they were frozen for a minimum of 48 hours to ensure the arthropods were killed before analysis. And this would have been what you would have seen if you went into one of my fields in 2017. As you can see, there's the zones radiating out from the red application area. And in 2016, we did it a little bit different. All zones comprised of 3 samples of 10 sweeps each. What we realized is we were not sampling proportional to the areas we were looking at. And so for 2017, we changed to the 200-foot zone had 6 samples at 58 sweeps. The 100-foot zone had 5 samples at 21 sweeps. The 50-foot zone had 3 samples at 12 sweeps, and the 25 and 0 stayed at 3 samples at 10 sweeps. And so if you were sampling this field, you would start at that 200-foot zone. You would work your way across, exchange sweep nets, and move to the adjacent zone. You would do this until you finished sampling the area. And you would, and once you were finished sampling the area, you'd leave in a manner that reduced the potential for anthropogenic movement. Once samples were frozen for 48 hours, each sample was inventoried. All arthropods were identified and then quantified. Once they had been quantified, they were sent through a series of washes and centrifuges to extract any viral DNA presence, and then replicated using PCR. In 2016, we had one field, and in that field we saw a spread of up to 100 feet in 7 days, and it remained in the field up to 14 days. In 2017, we had 3 fields that we sprayed, and we saw a spread of 200 feet in 3 days in all 3 fields, and that it remained in the field anywhere from 13 to 21 days. We ended up having 2 types of fields. We had 2 types of populations. We had populations when we started that were high, and then about halfway through, about the 7 day after application, they just crashed, and we saw that the virus did likewise soon after it was gone from the crop canopy. However, we did have 1 field in 2017. It was the 3rd field we sprayed, where we actually saw a sustained population for the duration of this experiment. And so that's what I'm showing here. The 3 days after the application, we only saw 4 samples that were positive, but 3 of those were in the 200-foot distance, and 4 samples positive outside of the application area, excuse me. But then for the 7, 10, 14, and 21-day after application, we saw all samples were positive except for about 4 or 5. So going back to the original objective of trying to understand the efficacy of this product based on horizontal transmission and residual time, we found that it was capable of spreading up to 200 feet, and we also found that it lasted anywhere from 13 to 21 days in the field. And we do believe this is a possible function of the host population. However, we only had 4 fields, and only 1 of those fields had that sustained population, so we cannot prove this statistically. One other aspect of this is we monitored infected larvae during this process as well, and through PCR as well, we would sample for individual larvae. and we or individual carriers, and we actually found 14 novel HERMPV carriers that were coming in contact with these infected larvae and were part of the spread of this virus. This is novel because previous to this, all literature focused on predators and parasitoids, and most of these 14 families that we saw, which are depicted, some of which are depicted here, are not predators or parasitoids like the spotted cucumber beetle. Some of them are, like the red wasp, but we found several families of flies that were positive for HERMPV, as well as three-cornered alfalfa hoppers and other commonly found arthropods in soybean fields. So what's the takeaway from this? It's important to target the correct larval population, those first through third instars. If you're targeting fourth instars, 35% mortality is unacceptable. You're not going to get the control you want. You want to target the first through third instars. Also, we did see that this virus is capable of spreading up to 200 feet, possibly further. That's as far as we sampled. And so this does lead to the potential for a strip or grid application, and future studies need to be utilized to look at that. We do now have a better understanding of the residual time, even though we believe it to be a function of the host population. We do know that in our study, at least, it lasted anywhere from 13 to 21 days on average. And with these 14 novel families of carriers, it does help us understand a little bit better the factors that the biotic factors that play a role in the dissemination, which were previously unknown. But ultimately, this data hopefully will help growers implement this product into their spray regimes when those conditions are prime to maximize the efficacy of this product. With that, I'd like to thank Travis Foskey for the use of his lab, Nick Sider, Holly Popham, and Kyle Paddock, AgBiTech for funding, and the University of Arkansas Division of Agriculture. I'll take any questions if I have time. Yes, sir. So the question is, how does infection occur, basically? It has to be ingested. So, yeah, when you make the application, basically it coats the leaf surface, they feed on that, and they ingest it then. They might just, I mean, if they're just munching here and there, they could get it. But, yes, it does have to be ingested to cause infection. Most viruses do. I think the only entomopathogenic things that don't are fungal and nematodes. Yes, sir.
With that in mind, do you know how long is it stable on the plant surface after spraying? Does it have to be ingested within a certain window?
So the question is, how long is it stable? And that's a very good question. A lot of research back in the 70s looking at another product saw very quick degradation due to UV light. With the product I was looking at, I don't think there's been published research on that. It is a problem with viruses in general, UV degradation. So we like to think that you're getting your maximum benefit in the first hour after application. Yes. The question is, do I think honeybees could be transmitting this also? I never saw a honeybee come in contact. I don't see why they couldn't if they're looking for water, if they're looking for like a water source and they see the liquefaction coming in contact and drinking it, then they would be transmitting it. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. So the question is, did I think all these were foraging on the cadavers? All these pictures represent arthropods that I saw feeding on cadavers. So, yes, I do believe that they're foraging on them. Yes, sir.
And with the question about stability and UV degradation, if it might only last a few hours, then why are you seeing persistence up to 21 days?
So the question is, if it only lasts a few hours, why am I seeing a residual up to 21 days? I believe it has a lot to do with the cycle of the virus. So the way the virus works is it takes that 4 to 6 days to die, which allows for another population to come into play. So it's possible that if I sampled in between my sample times, there wouldn't actually be a lot of virus present in the crop canopy, except for those carriers that have it on them or inside them where it's protected. It would be in the shaded areas of the plants possibly as well. But the stuff that's just sitting out on the top of the crop canopy, that's what's going to be degraded very quickly. The stuff that gets underneath the canopy into the understory, that's the stuff that's going to last a long time. And once it gets in the soil, it lasts even longer. So I do think it has a little bit to do with that. So the question is, do I think that these arthropods play a vital role in the dissemination? And I believe they do. I believe that in the system you were talking about with several arthropod complexes, they are important, that they do carry enough in them to cause infection, whether it be through surface contamination or actual consumption and then the frass that they produce. I do think that that does have enough for infection.